This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, Sharp Money, VSiN, the sports betting network, as we welcome you in on a Wednesday midweek here on the program. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Dustin Sweetelson, the big guy, hanging out at the D, downtown Las Vegas. We do have breaking quarterback news, which we'll get to start the program. Let's go ahead and show you what's on tap for today's Sharp Money. Dennis Dodd, been doing it a long time, college football reporter, CBS, is going to join Mr. Palm, Mike Palm, Circa the D, Golden Gate Casino, VP of Ops, VSiN host, is going to stop by. Palm versus the big guy. The big guy, of course, picked up the dub last week. See if we can carry it over into the August 28th Wednesday, Dustin. Antoine Staley, we're going to talk about the Jets. The Jets seem to be, I don't know if Dustin went over to the Westgate yesterday and grabbed that 30-1 like our buddy Bo had written in about, but that's a tremendous number. And you heard the quotes from Aaron Rodgers yesterday talking about, hey, I don't want to go out looking like a fool. So it sounds like this could be last year. He is 40.5. We'll talk to Antoine Staley about the Jets. He's on the beat for the Daily News. And then a Wednesday staple on the program, professional handicapper Scott Spreitzer, is going to stop by. Been doing it for over 30 years here in Las Vegas. We've got a lot to do, including live bullets coming up on the program. We are just about a little over an hour away from Astros, Phillies, and Rays, Mariners. I've got two bets apiece. You know, the big guy, he's going to mix in something. So we're going to get down as a family, like your boy Tommy DeVitz. You understand what I'm saying, Dustin Sweetelson. Also, got a full slate of Thursday college football games tomorrow. Here's what we're going to do. North Dakota State and Colorado is fascinating on so many levels. So we have to discuss that, of course. That's not your normal FCS team. They've won 9 titles, North Dakota State, since 2011. So, I mean, that is Dion. There's a lot of drama surrounding the Colorado program right now. I find that to be a fascinating game. So we'll talk about North Dakota State, Colorado, and then North Carolina, Minnesota. Pretty young coach at North Carolina, just turned 74, Mac Brown. So keeping with the youth movement there in Chapel Hill, we'll talk North Carolina, Minnesota. But we start here. So do what you will with the information I'm about to tell you. And again, if you're a Steelers backer, they're sitting at 8.5 in the market, and they were a playoff team last year. Wait, check yourself. What? Yeah, the Steelers made the postseason last year. Now, will they make it this year? The defense is going to have a lot to say about that. It's a very good defensive team, and they're going to want to run the football. And calling the plays is Arthur Smith. I think Arthur Smith is having a tough day today because Mike Tomlin has named Russell Wilson the starter in Pittsburgh. Now, look, this isn't a lot of drama. There's not a lot of surprise here. The assumption was Russell Wilson, and we told you when he signed with the Steelers, you know, maybe Tomlin was being earnest when he said it was an open competition. I think you guarantee a vet like that, he's going to get a chance to start, and that's exactly what's going to happen. So Russell Wilson, the big guy, his favorite quarterback in the NFL, he doesn't tell you that on the air, but he just loves him off the air. And, you know, look, it was a disparate snap count in the preseason. Fields played 56, Wilson just 25. Now, Wilson completed 10 of 12, 73 yards, and led a scoring drive. But here's the difference. Fields averaged 8.3 air yards per attempt, while Wilson averaged 5.7. Why do you average 5.7? Because you're no longer in the type of shape you used to be in, and you're a little gun shy, so you get rid of the ball quickly, and you find yourself a couple three and outs. 5.7 is not going to get it done for Russell Wilson and Steelers fans, which, by the way, that is the best fan base in all of football. And they've got something to look forward to this year because Russell Wilson has been named the starter. Dustin Sweetelson, we say hi for the first time and a little reaction to the Steeler quarterback news.
I'm going to be the crazy one. I'm okay with it because it seems so obvious that we're all counting the Steelers out. We're counting Mike Tomlin out. We don't believe in Russell Wilson for obvious reasons that you see play out on and off the field because he is a giant weirdo, perhaps the weirdest guy going in sports today. But there is a world where things do work out for this team early in the year. End of the schedule, absolute killer. There's no denying that. All of their division games towards the back end post-bye, and they have a 9-week bye. But there is a world where they start 4-0 At Atlanta, getting things in order there. At Denver, Bo Nix is the starting quarterback. Taking on a depleted Chargers team. At Anthony Richardson, who looked less than sharp in the preseason, taking on this Steelers defense that will challenge to be the best in all of football this year. 4-0, I don't think is insane out of the gates, which is awesome considering three of those four are on the road. So you start with that as a base here in this world that I'm creating, this alternate universe, and all of a sudden they lose to Dallas, but they beat the Raiders, and they lose to the Jets, but they beat the Giants, and they have the bye, and they can beat the Commanders, because one thing Mike Tomlin has done routinely in his career is beat up on rookie quarterbacks, and I see the Denver Broncos and Bo Nix on the schedule. I see Washington and Jaden Daniels on the schedule. So I'm assuming those are two victories for the Steelers. Is there a world where we are all totally overrating the back end of this schedule and the Steelers could make up for it with a hot start to this season? I'm just putting it out there.
That was well done. It really was. I mean that. Because look, these are 3-hour programs and words are important. So saying a lot of them is also important. But you should go ahead and crawl under that desk and hide yourself the rest of the way. Because if you're going to say all those words, which is completely justifiable. Okay, you've got them beating the Falcons at Atlanta, 9.5 win total. You've got them beating the Broncos, a lot of juice. You've got them beating the Chargers, and you've got them at Indy beating the Colts. So a 4-0 start for the Steelers. You mentioned the back end. Okay, at my Commanders. It gets dicey, Dustin, to say the least.
No, it does.
Ravens, Browns, Bengals, Browns, Eagles, Ravens, Chiefs, Bengals. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
No, I know. The question is, can they make up enough on the front end and be like a little under 500 on the back end? That's what I'm wondering here, because look, let's do a basic. This show has a great evaluation process. Either you're a donk or you're not, right?
Fair.
Mike Tomlin. I would not tell that man he is a donk. Definitely not to his face, and definitely not on national television and radio right now. Watch us on YouTube TV, by the way. But Raheem Morris, who he's taking on in week one, who's a donk in that one?
Okay, coaching advantage, I would agree.
Sean Payton, who's the donk in that one?
But you have a thing against Sean Payton. I don't know where it's come from.
He's a weirdo.
He couldn't stand Russell Wilson last year and still won 9 games. I think you're a little down on Payton. He did win a Super Bowl.
Harbaugh.
Drew Brees.
Jim Harbaugh, donk. Shane Steichen.
No, stop.
Shane Steichen, not a donk. Mike McCarthy, the donkiest of donks to ever donk. Antonio Pierce is a donk. Robert Saleh
is a donk. Now you're going to go through the whole entire, you're going to go 18 weeks on me now?
If we're looking in football, when it comes down to these head coaches and their preparation and their ability to exploit other teams, do you trust anyone more than Mike Tomlin to make another team blink?
No, I don't disagree with that. I don't. However, I am going to put you on the spot then, because you get plus 120 to get to 9 or more. 8.5 is the win total for the Steelers. Over is plus. So you just made your – you knew I was going to trap you eventually.
I know.
So you just made your case. So obviously you're heavy on the over.
I'm just creating this world where we are all saying something is so obvious. And the one thing I've learned in betting is that when everyone else is in agreement with you and there's no one on the other side, we're all probably going to be wrong.
I think it's fair. Look, the defense could be – caveat, healthy, could be the best in the NFL.
I mean,
to me, it's them or the Jets.
I mean, I think I like them better than the Jets, and it has nothing to do with the Reddick situation. How did Patrick Queen end up there? I don't understand how Patrick Queen finds his way to this defense. The trade of Deontay Johnson to go get Jackson from Carolina to fill that corner spot, that was a massive need. Like, there are no weak spots. There is not an area of that defense where they are not, like, too deep in impact defensive players. I think that because of that, they're going to be in every game. They're not getting blown out despite me not trusting this offense a lick.
I think Cordarrelle Patterson adds an element to the offense. He is familiar with Arthur Smith. I do think if you had true serum with the new OC, I think he would have told you he'd prefer Fields. And let's just start to build something. You mentioned if there is, I guess, a soft spot of the schedule would be those first four. Let's get those reps in with Fields and then at least show that back end of the schedule a little different look on offense. You just can't show a different look. It's a very rudimentary offense with Russell Wilson in there. It's very predictable.
I do like a factor, though, where Justin Fields can see what isn't working when Russ eventually fails, right? Say Russell Wilson doesn't work out like we're expecting. Watching from the sidelines, watching in the prep, realizing what he can do differently than Russ. It's kind of like when people don't have any bets to tell you that they like, but you put out a bet and they poke holes through it. Justin Fields can watch other people, Russell Wilson, put himself out there, compete in these games, see what doesn't work. Now he can come in on the other side and know exactly what he needs to do to be more successful in the Steelers offense.
Okay, if I could just peel back the curtain just for a second. That was Dustin saying his least favorite thing in the world is when he puts his neck out there and people don't prepare and then they poke holes in his bets.
Yeah, because they could have just prepared their own bets.
He hates that.
Just come prepared.
Look, 8.5. The Tomlin conversation is fascinating because if you just pour through it, we all know the double-digit wins. But he's done it with less. He just has. And even the back end of the Roethlisberger career, specifically Ben's last year to get in a postseason, was incredible. So he's going to coach him up. That's what I keep on talking about with your boy Daboll. At a certain point, you have to stop making excuses about the decisions you make, and you got to coach him up. Sean McVay.
Yeah.
So I would agree. If gun to head, I guess I'd have to say 8-win team.
Yeah, that's where
but
I'm at.
It's tough to doubt them.
Week 15 through week 18 is the meanest thing I've ever seen anyone do on a schedule ever.
Roger Goodell hates that city. When we come back, we love the NFL betting guide. We're going to jump into it. Okay, Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. A great week one in college football. I believe our next guest, and this is a thrill for Dustin Sweetelson and I, Dennis Dodd. I'm pretty sure over the past 25 years, I haven't consumed anybody more on college football over at CBS or any outlet than Dennis Dodd. And he joins us now. We appreciate the time at Dennis Dodd, CBS. So you've been doing it for a while. Is this the weirdest season that we're ever going to approach as far as you're covering the sport?
Well, it's the most unique, I think. Weird is one word too, but it's unique because of the expanded playoff. I think there are going to be things that we haven't even thought of that pop up regarding that. I mean, think about this. Literally the best place to be if you're in one of these top conferences is a third place team, because you don't have to risk your record. You're almost certainly going to go 10-2 and you're going to be in the playoff. And you may host a game in the first round. So weird stuff like that, but no, I think it's going to be fantastic. I think in early November, we're going to be sitting here talking about maybe 20 or 25 schools instead of 6 or 8.
Yeah, Dennis, and it feels like later in the year, we're going to have more teams fighting for spots. So more of that later schedule is going to matter than it has in the past. And a lot of times these SEC teams end up in that conversation, right? How many SEC teams do you anticipate being playoff bound this year?
I think there'll be 8 combined from the SEC and Big Ten. I've been throwing this stat around for months because we figured it out a while ago. In the 10-year history of the CFP, had this structure been in effect, there would have been an average of 7.73 teams from the currently constructed Big Ten and SEC in every year. That's just an average. There were 2 or 3 years where there were 9. So when people want to talk about parity, it ain't going to be parity. It's going to be 8 or 9 every year, 7 to 9, I should say. Every year from those two, and everybody else take a shot at it. I mean, if they have 8, think about what that means. That means that for the rest of college football, they're going to have 4 spots for 100 schools. So that's going to be unique.
The great Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports, joining us talking college football. So whether it's unfair, Clay Helton, Dennis, I'm in Los Angeles. He had become kind of a punchline as the head coach of USC. And again, may not be fair, but I will say this. He had a better winning percentage at USC than Lane Kiffin. So that brings us to Ole Miss. And you wrote about Ole Miss. Is it college football, playoff, or bust? His team is loaded this year. He's a wonderful personality. He's brought a lot of money to the franchise. But there's a lot of pressure on him this year with this squad.
There's a lot of pressure, but I think at a place like Ole Miss, if you contend for the playoff every year, I've said this throughout the offseason, there's a group of about, I don't know, six schools where if they continue to do what they have done historically, they're going to be in the playoff. In other words, the playoff, because it's so big, meets these schools halfway. So if Alabama goes 10-2 again or 11-1, they're going to be in. If Arizona, Missouri, Kansas State, maybe Kansas do the same things they did last year, they're going to be in the playoff or at least contending for it. But yeah, I mean, to your point, it is kind of natty or bust. They've gone all in the portal. All 22 starters are back. The last time I checked, unless there's been injuries in the preseason. They've got a fire starter quarterback in Jackson Dart. They lost their best running back to Ohio State in the portal, Quinshon Judkins, and they haven't even blinked. So I think they're going to be in. I wouldn't call it pressure. I mean, Ole Miss is a team where, okay, if they get into the playoff and lose, is Ole Miss one of those teams that's going to hang a banner in the indoor? I think that's a good talking point sometime. You know, Ole Miss, yes or no? I don't think so. I don't think you go to the playoff at Ole Miss and hang CFP participant banner. Maybe you do it App State, but not Ole Miss.
Yeah, that's great. And no Alabama on the schedule, as you mentioned, and no Nick Saban at Alabama. And it seemed like the worst job in the world to be the man following the man down in Tuscaloosa. But there does feel to be a consensus that Kalen DeBoer has what it's made to really replace Saban and pick up where he left off. Why is Kalen DeBoer the right guy to be the first coach post-Saban?
Well, one of the reasons is he has totally embraced what you just said. He wanted to be the man to follow the man, the coach to follow the coach. In fact, that's one of the first questions the AD, Greg Byrne, asked him when he flew up to Seattle the day after Nick retired. I think it was January 11th when he flew up there. And said, you do understand what you're doing here. You're replacing, you know, the all-time greatest coach. And he said, this is what Kalen DeBoer said. He said, there's only going to be one person to replace Nick Saban at Alabama, and I want to be that person. He's totally confident in his own ability. He's comfortable in his own skin. And I'll tell you what, just hearing things from inside the program to this point, it's all worked. Everyone has bought in. He's been great. The fans love him because I don't know what it is today, but in any given day, that 25 class is either first or second in 24/7 sports. And that's what those fans live on down south, those recruiting classes. And so while they may take a dip slightly this year, I think they're going to be right back where they were contending for national championships under this guy. I think it was a great hire to this point.
And Dennis, prior to the conversation, we were kind of talking about this is a great week one slate. I want to ask you about a specific game where maybe the perceptions changed on the programs a little bit. Clemson and Georgia.
Yeah.
So it may surprise you to know that Georgia and Atlanta is laying 13.5 points hosting Dabo and Clemson. Do you think that's a disrespectful number or fair?
I think it's fair. I mean, almost forget Clemson. It's Georgia at the height of their powers. Don't forget they lost the chance at winning three in a row. A chance of winning three in a row, not winning it, by losing by 3 points in the SEC championship game to Alabama. And some argued they should have been in there, including Kirby Smart. So, no, I think the line is fair. I think the line is accurate. It's the second biggest spread that Clemson has faced since Dabo's been there, since 2010, his second season. And subtext to that, to this game, I think it's a referendum on Dabo himself. You know, the no transfer policy, or few transfers, I should say. Is Cade Klubnik enough to get them over the hump? Because they're not competing against, you know, a standard. They're competing against their standard. And their standard is national championships. Since their last title in 2019, they're 54-13. Name me a program outside of maybe Alabama and Georgia that wouldn't take that record. But it hasn't been enough. Last year's four losses tied the most since, I think, 2014, something like that. So 9-4 was not good. So this is, I think it's it's heartening for Clemson in this game if they play well, because things are not trending well right now.
Yeah, and there's a path in the ACC for Clemson right now, Dennis, with Georgia Tech upsetting FSU. Let's go to another game with another ACC team taking on an SEC squad, Miami, laying 2.5 in the Swamp. Mario Cristobal with a lot of hype this year. How do you think they match up with Florida week one and then long term for the season? Can they capitalize on this opportunity and win the league?
Yeah, this has trap game written all over it to me. Yeah. Look, Miami has the better roster. They have the better quarterback, arguably. Cam Ward has thrown for more yards than any Division I quarterback since 2020. Started at FCS Incarnate Word. He's got 13,000 yards. He was one of the most pursued quarterbacks in the portal in the offseason. They've got the running back, Martinez, from Oregon State. But can you go on the road opening day to a program that is suffering? This would be their what? If they've lost five in a row to end the season. That's one of their longest losing streaks in years. I think Florida's just frothing at the mouth to get this over with and get over on Miami. I think it's kind of a loser leave town match, certainly for Billy Napier, who's on the hot seat. I don't think Mario's in trouble if they lose this game, but he is 12-13. In his first two seasons at Miami. And I just looked it up before we came on. That's the worst start by a Miami coach in his first two seasons since Lou Saban in 1978. So they've got to get something going. Florida, I think, could win the game and have a terrible season and Billy be fired. I think in this one, this is almost like a bowl game to them. It's that in-state rivalry at home. The Swamp's going to be cooking. I think they win this.
Dennis calling this a trap game. He might have to get a job here at VSiN. Dennis Dodd, it's an honor to read you. Thanks for joining us. CBS Sports college football writer at Dennis Dodd, CBS. And safe travels to Ann Arbor for that Texas matchup. Thank you, Dennis.
All right, I'll do it. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you very much. Hope to talk to Dennis throughout the year. He is it's either him or Staples that I've read more than anybody over the last 20 years.
Yeah, and when you think about the context, everything he's seen, the shift from pre-BCS, the BCS, we're going to look back and be like, I can't believe we allowed that to happen. But, I mean, he's awesome. He's just as good as it gets when it comes to covering the sport.
And he went to Missouri. Didn't even have a chance to ask him about a team that's got a lot of hype this year, big guy.
Oh, we will bring up Missouri during Palm versus the big guy because a player on that team is an answer to one of my questions.
Ooh, a little bit of a tease. Mike Palm, superstar. And Palm versus the big guy next. Okay, it's time for Palm versus the big guy. Dustin, if you can send over, Mike's up first today, if you can send over the updated record, which you may have. Yes, you did. Dustin picked
11,
up a W
six.
Last week.
Sorry.
11-6-1 to Mike Palm. So new shot clock this week, 45 seconds, and we're going to get it started with this one. Mike Palm, the most under-the-radar 2024 NFL team is?
This was one of the questions?
No, this wasn't a question.
This was last week.
Hold on, boys. Restart the clock.
It was quarterbacks.
No,
last week that was a question last week, but I don't think it made it to this week. Am I right,
okay,
Dustin?
I did not see this week.
By the way, my answer was the Arizona Cardinals, but that's not a question.
No, you're 100% right. The most most underrated quarterback in the NFL is Mike Palm.
Brock Purdy. Nobody wants to give him any respect just because of where he was drafted and this fictitious narrative of Mr. Irrelevant. All the guy did was win all five starts when he was pressed into duty late in 2022. Of course, he was injured early in that NFC title game and they got run out in Philadelphia. And then he comes back and goes 17-4 last year, was in control. Once again, Kansas City found themselves behind in a Super Bowl. The guy gets no respect simply because of where he got drafted. 68%, 69% completion percentage. Michael always talks about yards per attempt, 9.5 yards per attempt. All the underlying stats are there and the record's there.
The single most underrated and disrespected athlete of this generation is Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is remarkably consistent. You just set the calendar, you know what you're going to get from the guy. Seven seasons of 4,000 pass yards. As a full-time starter in the NFL, where all these players are up and down and they're going to different systems and you don't know how they're going to be schemed up or fit or various weapons come and go from their offenses. His average season is 67.6% completion, 4,500 pass yards, 28 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. He played 90 straight games before his Achilles injury for Minnesota last season. You know what you're getting. Time. He's always available.
Dustin, Circa 9.2 documentary is a huge hit. If you were making a Vegas-themed reality show, what would it be?
Yeah, I think it's important to note Las Vegas, especially for people who are coming here for the first time. This city does a few things better than the rest of the world. I think drinking, I think food, I think partying, and the last one, of course, is strippers. So I would like a Vegas documentary following these exotic dancers in their day-to-day lives because they have some of the craziest stories you've ever heard. I want to hear their wild nights, what they've been offered by people, some of the stories from the most powerful people in the world being weak to them, but most importantly, how I can make one of them my wife one day.
The Netflix documentary started with the quarterbacks, and then we went to the receivers, which was markedly better than the boring quarterbacks. Version 3 should be the valets. What a life these guys have. Here, all you need is a high school education, and you're going to make six figures. All the stories they would have with some of their guests. And let me tell you something. From all the valets I know, they're some of the most fierce sports bettors that we have. We actually had a valet that won the Survivor contest the first year, but he was disqualified because he didn't know you couldn't be an employee. You'd say there was 35 chopped. There was actually 36, but he was disqualified.
Mike Palm, NFL Sundays are so great at home or at the casino. Yep. Is going to an NFL game the worst live event?
So up until last November, I would have said yes, Patrick, but then I was exposed to something that is much worse live, and that is called F1. What a disaster trying to get there. Then they put you out in this cold weather. If you have a seat in the grandstand, oh, that's terrific. So every 10 seconds for a half a second, you get to see some cars go by. Everybody goes and sits inside and watches the event on TV when you're there in person. It was awful.
It is the NFL. It's by far the worst experience because the disparity between the home viewing experience to what you're watching live. Unless you're sitting right at the 50-yard line, you can't really tell what's going on. You're out of the loop when it comes to the millions of replays we get, not knowing what is the right call, holding your breath, waiting for the ref to announce it. You also can't hear anything happening. And then, God forbid, there's a debate as to whether something is a catch or not. You will not have a clue if the right call is made or not. You are unsure of everything happening on the field. The NFL is the worst in-game experience live.
Dustin Sweetelson, has the College Football Playoff Committee nailed it with the 12-team playoff?
So the best part about the 12-team playoff is, like, this is the natural progression. I think 6 would have been clunky playoff teams. 8 would have felt like we're delaying the inevitable. 12 feels just right, and I think we're going to look back on the BCS era where we allowed a committee and a computer to pick two people or two teams at the end of the season like it's the horse and carriage going across the country on the Oregon Trail. More games will matter late in the season. Late weeks haven't mattered unless you bet on them in recent years. One loss in the season is no longer over. Teams have a chance to fight until the very end. 12 teams is perfect.
How I know they nailed it, Patrick, is that the playoff betting, yes or no to make the playoffs at Circa, is up by a factor of 18 this year over last year. Almost 20 times more action because suddenly it's become compelling. Will there be a second team out of the ACC or the Big 12? Can the Big 10 get 4, and who is it? Could the SEC get 5? Can Notre Dame still get in if they lose at Texas A&M? What will the seeding be like? How many years can you play in these cold weather environments in the first round? Probably only one. That'll change. But they absolutely nailed it from a betting perspective.
Mike Palm, we asked underrated, the most overrated quarterback in the NFL is?
It has to be Tua. Because to me, he has almost zero value when you get to the playoffs because he's never, ever won a game under 40 degrees. How could the Dolphins ever do anything in the playoffs? What's going to happen? They have to be the one seed, or Jacksonville has to be the home team, or you have to get a dome team like Indianapolis or the Texans. He didn't do it at Alabama. He obviously never encountered it in high school. And in the pros, 0 for 4 all time, and we saw the performance in Kansas City last year. I wanted to argue Dak, because of the playoff failures, has been more repeated, but Tua doesn't even give you a chance to win.
Your most overrated quarterback in the NFL is no doubt Justin Herbert. This guy is 2 games under 500 for his career. and he's had a ton of weapons to work with. He's 0-1 in the postseason where we measure these quarterbacks. He blew a 27-0 lead against the Jaguars in his only postseason appearance. This is a guy that is going to make $52.5 million this year, and we're still questioning, does he have it?
Dustin Sweetelson, what's the best sandwich?
So there are sexy sandwiches, the Philly cheesesteak, the Italian sub, the Reuben, the chicken sandwich, and even the grilled cheese. But you can't eat them every day. You're going to get sick of them. And they really can't get you ready to attack your day, and I think that's very important. The most repeatable and consistently great sandwich is the bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich from a New York City bodega. See, the combination of the soft sesame seed bun with the melted American cheese, the crispy griddle bacon, and over-hard eggs combined with salt, pepper, and ketchup is the greatest combination of flavors that could ever hit your tongue.
The greatest sandwich I ever had in my life, Patrick, was in March of 1997 when Wendy's introduced a chicken and mushroom sandwich. I ate it every day for lunch for 11 days. I went back on the 12th day, and they said, we've taken it off the menu. Not enough people bought it. So it can't be the answer since it's no longer available. The answer is going to be the Bobby. And for the Las Vegas locals, you'll know this. This sandwich from Capistrami's has is your Thanksgiving meal all in one. It's turkey, dressing, and just the right amount of cranberry. Capriati's, Bobby. That's the franchise, the Bobby, yep.
It's pretty good.
Okay. So I think you guys gave the two quarterbacks that had to be given on underrated, so I called that a push. Dustin, I was prepared for the documentary in Vegas to give you strippers. Valet was the best answer overall of all the answers today. That's clever. That's interesting. The fact that they make more money than you would ever assume, look kind of down upon. They bet. I like it. The NFL Live question. Sorry, Dustin. F1 was the answer. College football. 12 team. Both gave great answers. Mike brought the handle into it.
Okay, I have access to that.
You had a comeback, but you lost. The Herbert answer was tremendous. The sandwich, I gave it to you because of passion. But I was probably going to say push. Mike wins 3-2.
I was close. It was close. I can't argue.
It was important to me to go out a champion today, right? It's important to go out. What was your answer?
Wait, hold on. Gable. I sent Gable the questions. He says. He said push, Dustin. He had it 2-2 with two pushes.
Yeah. The only day he didn't think Dustin either got a push or better was when he was here. What was your answer for Heisman? I thought that was a great
Brady
question.
Brady Cook, 50-1.
I said Ashton Jeanty, the Boise State running back, at 100-1. Who was your all-time interview for sports?
Oh, you know what? I didn't even come up with that question.
Oh, God, I would have really slaughtered.
Dean Smith.
Well, he has to be alive. Has to be alive.
I didn't have an answer. I'm going to go with the
person that's alive that I said we should have a roast for, Kim Mulkey. Kim Mulkey has got to be the best interview of all time right now.
You are.
Kim Mulkey.
Glad it wasn't asked, but I didn't prepare anything.
Kim Mulkey.
So Gable goes 2-2-2. I said 3-2.
2-1.
And one.
Yeah. Could have been
3-1-2. Okay?
Yeah, next time I pitch this format to someone else, so there'll be no pushes allowed.
You would agree valets was the answer.
Yeah, but I need to use the platform to find a stripper wife. Everyone knows that.
Mike, tremendous.
Thank you for this
we'll
year
talk to you next
for this
week.
Year of my life. Good luck to both of you.
It's been fun. We'll see you soon, hopefully. Okay, Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. As we welcome you back, our next guest may have the most exciting job in NFL journalism this year because he's on the Jets beat for the New York Daily News. Columnist there, Antoine Staley. Previously covered the Miami Dolphins, Carolina Panthers, Miami Hurricanes, Seminoles, and Oregon Ducks. But I think you're in the right spot, Antoine, if you just want some juice this year, because not only in the betting market, but just week to week, you should have a lot to discuss. Would you agree?
I would say the Chiefs are probably number one, but you know, as far as storylines, then yeah, I can see what you're saying. Definitely. They definitely don't lack for content. That's for sure.
no, content aplenty. And let's just start with kind of the formal stuff. Hassan Reddick, you wrote recently that Robert Saleh said he had no plans to reach out. Is there an update? My assumption is there isn't, but what's up with Hassan Reddick right now?
No update at all. I mean, he's still holding out. They haven't had much of an update since training camp started, which was July 23rd. He's been fine every day since then. So, yeah, I mean, time is kind of closing short for him if he wants to play in week one. I think Robert Saleh left the door open for him to do so if he would report within the next week or so. But obviously, even if he did report like next week, it would be a situation where he'd probably be using as a situational pass rusher. But yeah, he definitely, the sooner he gets in, the better. But you know, as of right now, nobody knows exactly when he's going to report, if at all, actually.
Yeah. So Antoine, let's talk about this defense without Hassan Reddick. Still special, right? At all three levels. What do you think the ceiling for this Jets defense could be this year?
I think it's some question marks, actually. I mean, you look at the defensive line. I mean, they lost 20 sacks from a year ago. Bryce Huff ended up leaving to go to the Eagles. Quentin Jefferson, I think, was an underrated player for him that could play on the inside and outside. And then John Fleck and Myers also did a lot of dirty work, too. So, and then we're also a defense that also had trouble stopping the run, too. They were 25th in rush defense a year ago. They were 124 yards. So I definitely think, while good, I definitely think they have some big question marks on the front lines, not necessarily Quentin Williams, but, you know, outside of that, Jermaine Johnson had a really good year in 2023. And, you know, they definitely going to need him to step up if Reddick does not report there, including Will McDonald. They really like Michael Clemens as well. But, you know, I think the linebacking core, the cornerback room is definitely among the best in the league. Quincy Williams was an All-Pro last year. C.J. Mosley is also one of the best linebackers in his generation. And then you look at the cornerbacks with obviously Sauce Gardner, what he's able to do in his first 2 years. DJ Reed, very underrated. And then Michael Carter II, number two. I mean, one of the best slot corners in the league. So I definitely think, you know, the ceiling could be, you know, probably, you know, a top five defense once again. But yeah, they definitely have to straighten up the run defense, something they were not able to do a year ago.
Antoine Staley joining us, New York Daily News. He's on the Jets beat, writer and columnist at Antoine Staley. Okay, so let's hop from defense to offense. Some questions about the offensive line. They went to the draft. They went to some vets. How do you sum up the Jets offensive line right now?
I mean, I think it's in a much better place. I mean, you go get old-fashioned from Penn State. I definitely think that was a, you know, good key signing there. They hope he doesn't have to play at all this year, but considering Tyron Smith's injury history, he probably will at some point. And then if you're the Jets, you just have to hope Tyron Smith plays around 13 games, which he played for the Cowboys last year, as opposed to four the year before in 2022. But, you know, from a talent standpoint, it's definitely a much better roster there, especially getting Morgan Moses from the Ravens and also signing John Simpson too as well. So, yeah, they hope that they can avoid the injury bug on the offensive line, something they haven't been able to do the last couple years. But we'll see how it translates. But, yeah, they definitely have been hit by injuries the last couple of years on the offensive line, that's for sure.
Antoine, Garrett Wilson is a given, but help us understand the rest of that wide receiving core right now.
Well, it's a big question. I mean, Mike Williams is coming off an ACL injury. I mean, they imagine he'll be ready for week one, but I don't know how many plays. He'll probably be on a pitch count there, so he might play upwards to 20-25 plays. I mean, Alan Lazard's coming out for a really disappointing season. Should be better with Aaron back in the fold, but still questions there. Malachi Corley, who they drafted in the third round, I don't think he's necessarily ready to take a full-on role yet. And then you got guys like, you know, Xavier Gibson there, also Jason Brownlee as well. They're really unproven guys too as well. So, yeah, I definitely think they have some major questions, you know, at the wide receiver position still outside of Garrett Wilson. And then we'll see if they can answer those or, you know, possibly make a trade somewhere down the line.
So certainly fantasy players are all over Breece Hall this year. What would you say, Antoine, are your expectations for the Jets running back this year?
I think he should have a good year. I don't know in terms of numbers. I mean, I thought he had a really good year last year, especially coming off an ACL injury the previous year. But, you know, he's second on the team in catches with 76 there. Probably should have ran over 1,000 yards as well if it wasn't for just a, you know, a mistake by the statistician of the Jets too. But yeah, I think you'll probably have, as far as all purpose, probably 1,700 yards there. I think that's a really good year for him. And I think he could possibly be the Jets MVP. I know a lot of people are looking at Aaron, but I think they're going to rely a lot on Breece Hall this year, especially with an older Aaron. So he won't have to do as much on the football field.
So I think it's a record, Antoine. We've talked for 7 minutes and I haven't asked you about Aaron Rodgers. I think I should. Expectations, has he looked healthy? We're nationally here, so we haven't been able to see him practice. Is everything look okay right now with the 40-and-a-half-year-old Rodgers?
Yeah, I think he has no restrictions there. I think he's gaining more confidence as time goes on. He's moving around in the pocket. That's probably the thing I've been impressed with the most. I mean, he's always going to be able to throw the ball, probably when he's 60 or 70 years old. It's just a matter of can he actually move around in the pocket. It's something that he has been able to do throughout the course of training camp there. We haven't seen him in a full game since he played with the Packers back in 2022. So that'll be interesting to see how he plays against the 49ers. But, all indications from the joint practices and just the times that I've seen him, I think he's as ready as he's probably going to be for the upcoming season.
Do you get the sense covering this team, Antoine, when it comes to the head coach, general manager, do you get the impression this is a one-year window or is that overblown?
Well, it depends on if they win this year. If they get to the playoffs, then I think they could possibly have a two-year window. But if they don't make the playoffs, then I think it's all bets are off. I think Robert Saleh could possibly lose his job, including Joe Douglas, and they understand what it is. And Aaron also in that window too, because they end up having a new coach come in. It's probably going to be the end of him because he's tied to Nathaniel Hackett, who, ended up being an offensive coordinator before before he came over. So all of them, they're all kind of tied together. So they understand what it is. They understand the pressure that, comes with this job, especially when you have an Aaron Rodgers and made the moves that they have. So they have to make the playoffs. Otherwise, I think you're looking at a wholesale changes throughout the whole organization.
It's a good answer. Okay, before we say goodbye, I'm sure you've had a chance to pour through the schedule. Would you mind giving me a prediction? What do you think the Jets finish with this year?
I hadn't officially came out my prediction yet, but I did do a preview. I think they're going to finish anywhere from 8 to 10 wins. I put them at 9-8. I think they're going to barely miss the playoffs. I just think the AFC is too strong. I mean, you look at their division. I think Buffalo, I think they're still going to win the division. Miami's still strong there. And then obviously you got to talk about Kansas City, Houston, and then just the AFC North as a whole. All four of those teams could end up making the playoffs. So I think the Jets will be there in the end. But, I don't see them as a playoff team, although they could get there. I definitely don't see them as a Super Bowl contending team this year.
That's what we like to hear as bettors. A lot of people are bullish on this Jets team. Nobody, when you're on the beat, you're closer to the teams than anybody else, and Antoine is. Antoine Staley, New York Daily News, Jets beat writer and columnist, at Antoine Staley on Twitter. Thank you for the time, Antoine. Appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. So that may shock some people, just the little ending there. Also, some questions in particular across the defensive front, Dustin, what we believed. Now, the Huff piece is interesting because it's kind of the assumption was Reddick would just replace that.
Yeah. Well, no.
That's the wrench.
Yeah, the thought was Reddick could potentially be an upgrade because Huff was super productive but more rotational, whereas Reddick, you look the last, 4 years, he's been incredible at getting to quarterbacks. So, sure, that piece, but when a beat writer says, I think it's 8 to 10 wins, yeah. 9-8. I felt like some of the life leave my body as someone who loves 20-1, 30-1 at Westgate on this team to win the Super Bowl.
Well, they're favorites in division. I'm going to tell you something right now, and I mean this because I respect the people on the beat more than anybody. I'm off the Jets.
No, his vibes felt like
his vibe was
like, guys,
it's not great.
He was like, guys, back it up. Like
he's like, guys, there's questions at wide receiver.
Yeah.
They've gotten better across the offensive line, but questions. Didn't want the rookie to start. Is somebody texting about a future there on the Jets? That's how you're looking.
No.
All right, that was an interesting conversation. When we come back, another interesting conversation. Professional bettor Scott Spritzer.